Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 419 of the Roguecast, recorded June 13th, 2023. Mole Rat Panther.
Hello, and welcome to last week.
Yes, we accidentally destroyed last week's podcast in a small fire.
Dave is generous to say, I did it. It's my fault. We recorded.
I sabotaged you. I don't know what you're talking about.
Nick was not here, and Dave and I...
Perhaps Nick could have been the voice of wisdom had he been here. Maybe there'll be a what-if one day.
Perhaps. And another Spider-Verse.
We could have been friends.
Anyway, yeah, we recorded a hour and a half long podcast, including a 30-minute discussion of Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
That's all gone. The only way to hear it is if you happen to be hiding in our office in one of the corners of the walls.
And we saw you, Steve, so it's not a big secret. You know what's funny, though, Randy, and I won't say why, but I thought that was a particularly good discussion we had.
It was.
Like, and it was like, oh, that was a very productive discussion.
And then Randy
delete.
Yeah, I accidentally I thought I'd exported it. I had not. I just brushed the button, apparently. So
yeah.
So this week, if you're hearing this, it means I didn't do that again.
This is Randy's new thing he does.
It's the race podcast.
So we're going to talk about Across the Spider-Verse at the end. We'll do a full spoiler discussion. I suppose the one advantage now is that probably a lot more people have seen that.
Yep.
It seems like everybody went and saw it. And so when you'll be able to listen to our spoiler discussion and engage with it fully.
And also we're going to talk about two pretty big weeks of comics. Last week was a big week. Dave and David and I talked about that. We're going to talk about it this week because we erased that whole podcast.
Yep.
And then we're going to talk about the comics this week, which has a couple notable things.
Yep.
Yes.
Before we get to all of that, though, worth noting that this weekend is our Lord of the Rings Magic the Gathering pre-release.
Yep.
Seems like a pretty big set. And that set will be dropping for pre-release weekend starting on Friday, which means you can come and buy Magic that has hobbits on it.
Yep. It's true. And aside from the fact that people seem very hyped for this, for people who don't play Magic... There's one crazy thing about this this set, and it's the One Ring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot there's like different versions. Like you can like with if you just probably buy enough packs, you're gonna get a One Ring.
They're using like the Soul Ring,
but there is a card where there's literally only one in all of the world version of it of the One Ring. And I think it's just like a game-breaking, you win the game kind of.
It doesn't really matter what it is. What it is, there's one card, and there is some store offering $1 million bounty if someone gets it.
And I don't know if it's the same person, but the I have heard there's someone who is willing to pay $1 million, and then they want to buy the card and then drop it into a volcano, Mount Doom style, and disintegrate it.
That's amazing.
And I'm really hoping that happens.
Yes.
That's what I want to happen.
That seems like something that would happen on John Oliver.
It does. Now, the part of it, it's very clearly kind of a bit of a PR thing above all else. And you know, it's kind of fun. It's ridiculous.
Yep.
But that
one card aside, I think this set
it's probably
going to
be
really
a badass
cool.
set. Yeah, you're going to have like Nazgul and Gollum cards and Gandalf and
the art
Balrogs. Yeah.
I want to only play giant eagles.
Okay.
They break the game.
If you do that, you can just fly to Mordor and win the game. You tap the eagle card and you win.
Tap eagles and win. Yes. Dave, do you remember last week? I don't remember where this came from. The title we were going with last week,
yes,
was The Witch's Ideal.
I've already forgotten
what it meant.
Yes, maybe it will recur in our discussion
maybe.
Of something
talking
like that.
About a Maleficent kind of thing.
No, maybe it
could have been.
Maybe.
There was a Maleficent comic.
It's possible. Yeah. Nick may have puzzled it out.
Maybe, but then how was it used? Let's see if we can puzzle it when we get to it.
Maybe. If only we had a recording of what we talked about last week. We could go back and go to the tape.
If only we lived in a more of a surveillance state.
Yeah.
I really wish there were more cameras recording my every move like it was the Truman Show.
I mean there is a camera recording you right now.
I mean, that is true.
I was able to find bits and pieces of our podcast on the camera feed.
That's hilarious.
But not enough to salvage. I tried, folks. I really did.
I don't know if people have any idea what we're talking about, but we have some security features in the office.
Yes, we do.
And that includes like some live camera stuff.
Yep. All right. New games for this week and last. Worth knowing, there's a new Pokemon, the Paldea Evolved, which is another region.
The what?
Paldea.
Okay.
Paldea to you.
The
sir.
Paldea.
What is the continent when Pangea? where it was all about continents stuffed together. Yes. Is this Pangea for Pokemon?
I don't know. There's Kabuto, I think, is one of them. I don't know what the regions are called.
I thought you knew every bit of Pokemon lore, Randy.
I think there's Pikachu in every region. I think there's always Pikachu. Right. They're an invasive species.
Yes.
They're the rat of the Pokemon world.
No, Rattata is the rat of the Pokemon world. Anybody who played Pokemon Go knows this.
Yes. Super Rattatas. we do have new Pokemon. We got Tins, Starters, I think. Yeah, Trainer's Toolkits.
Trainer's Toolkits.
And Boosters. So we have restocked on Pokemon.
Yep.
We got a Kickstarter game called Seas of Havoc, which comes with two expansions. Yep. So it's like the full deluxe edition. And it is a naval combat game, like pirates and that kind of thing, played with cards, like Memoir 44.
Yeah, and I've played a few games like that. Also, Gloomhaven, you deliver your attacks and stuff through hands of cards you've got.
Yep, yep.
It's a format I usually like. I think that deck building game has proven to be kind of a format I like. And even though like Memoir 44 came out long before the sort of modern deck building games, that is kind of how it worked. Yeah, you have to make these decisions. When do you use this big card to unleash all your fury? Do you want to do this? You know, how does it all interact? A sea combat game. You said it's pirates?
Pirates. I think it's pirates.
Okay.
It's called Seas of Havoc.
It could be Napoleonic Wars.
It sounds very piratey.
Napoleon people do not. There was havoc.
I mean, there was like naval battles in ancient Greece. They had havoc.
Did they have havoc?
Yeah. Did you not see 300?
Only pirates.
The Peloponnesian Wars, Randy. Jesus Christ.
There were wars. Was there havoc?
Not havoc from the X-Men.
Oh, okay.
My history I got from Zack Snyder's 300, so I was pretty sure the Persians had orcs on their side, giants.
War elephants, I think.
And slow motion.
And a warg somewhere in there, yes.
And lots of slow motion.
Plus warg.
Anyway, we also got the Aliens Colonial Marines Another Glorious Day in the Core game, which, great name.
Great title, yes. This is... I know that there was some tactical alien game back in the day, and like Space Hulk, which would end up launching the whole Warhammer franchise, was essentially a knockoff of running around in corridors with motion trackers trying to stop aliens.
I've been told that old alien game was like super difficult.
It was one of these like super hard games.
Yeah, I get a lot of those were very granular, and they came from like a very intense wargaming community.
But I felt like it had like the sort of Pandemic vibe of it was even fun to play no matter if you lost or not.
Maybe. I don't know too much about it.
This looked really cool. I was looking at the back of this, the new game.
It does look pretty cool. What I was saying when it first came in is like, when I was like watching Aliens, the original movie, I think it was around 13, this would have been the absolute perfect game to get for me at the time.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't still think Colonial Marines fighting Xenomorphs is cool. It's just that would have been the perfect time. I guess you presumably get to play Apone and Hicks and Vasquez and Drake and all that, right? Or is it like...
I don't think they're like
Those are all bad, Dave.
You could, but you're not recreating the scenario.
No, I think so. I think it's a different.
I think it's a different planet.
I hate this game. Don't buy it. No, that actually is its own cool sounding thing. What I think would be, what I would maybe assume that they would do would be a kind of a more general Xenomorphs versus Colonial Marines game, but possibly with scenarios that did recreate some stuff from the movie.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's co-op, which is cool.
Yeah,
and I know that
for
this was a this was a big hit. This is a reprint. It's been out of print for a few years.
Oh, I forgot it's a reprint.
Yeah, it's been out of print for a few years, and it's very highly rated.
So. Was it always called that?
Yeah.
What a memorable name, and yet I don't remember it existing
before. Yeah, somebody asked about it, and I was like, oh, I don't remember this.
It wasn't just like called Alien or like Xenomorph War or something like that.
Not that I'm aware of.
Get your Xenomorph War on.
We got the Transformers RPG, one of their first adventures, The Time Is Now, which involves time travel. I assume you go back in time and kill Robot Hitler.
Yeah, we don't know the exact deal. I'm not even 100% sure it involves time travel, but
told me it's involved time travel.
I told you that it involves stuff from different Transformers eras.
Oh, okay.
But you know how like they historically in a lot of versions of the Transformers lore they crash landed on Earth like millions of years ago, and the Dinobots were around then, and Beast Wars around then, and then there's like, so, or actually I think Beast Wars is sometimes it's actually the far flung future, right, Nick? I think it's the future. Optimus Prime already existed in that timeline and stuff like that. Anyway, my point is, it in some way touches on all that lore, which sounds cool. And as you will see, as we get into our comics discussion, there is reason to talk about Transformers this week. It's a stealth Transformers week.
Yeah, you and I are going to see Beast Wars later.
We're going to see Beast Wars. You could argue that this comic that we're going to talk about is truly Robots in Disguise.
It is.
Because we, the retailers, didn't even know what it was.
No.
Anyway, we'll get around to that.
Yeah. There's a Good Omens board game, for those who like Good Omens.
Yep. That's the TV show based on the Neil Gaiman book.
Yes. Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett.
What's that?
Neil Gaiman and Terry
Pratchett. Right, that's right. And so, yeah, this is branded and all the art and stuff, and it is clearly from the show. It's got David Tennant, right?
Yep.
And whoever the other guy is.
Michael Sheen.
Yes.
Not Michael Shannon.
Right.
It was Zod.
Correct.
And not happy about it.
Apparently.
I mean, he wasn't angry about it. He was just saying it wasn't fulfilling to play Zod again.
That's a funny thing.
But he wasn't, like, damning the movie. I think that's the thing that people are kind of just...
Oh, no, no. I just think it's kind of funny.
That's what the critics are doing.
It's kind of like... So for people who don't know, Michael Shannon, all he did was grouse, like, in an interview. It sounds like he's a slightly grumpy guy.
Yeah.
And I like Michael Shannon. He seems very smart and kind of acerbic in a way
you like your grumpy men actors.
I do. And he, actually, the thing he said about Trump one time was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It was an interview in Playboy.
What if he's like his character in Knives Out?
I would be less enthused. Anyway, he said that in the Flash movie that opens, this weekend?
Yes. Yeah.
He said that it was like, he kind of did one of those, it's not real acting, you're on a green screen, and I hated it, and all this. He was kind of a grump about it, and I just think it's funny the week before. It's actually no different from when Ian McKellen said that he was making, famously making the Lord of the Rings movies, but was having an extremely tough time and even had a breakdown one day from all the green screen stuff. Actors want to act against somebody. They don't want to stand in front of a green screen. At least your theater actors. Knucklehead actors like standing in front of green screens, though.
I would do it.
I bet Mark Wahlberg
would do it. I'd love standing in front of a green screen.
I did it for a few Transformers movies.
Yeah.
We also got a solo game I learned this week called Legacy of You. This is the guys who make the Architects of the West Kingdom, the Renegade game.
Legacy of You, that's Y-U, it's a
Y-U,
location
it's, yes,
thing.
Yes, it is not you, Y-O-U.
Right.
Like it is me.
Yep.
But anyway, it is a solo game, which we're seeing more and more of those.
Solo board game.
Yep. And
that's interesting.
Fully resettable, non-linear campaign game, which you step into the role of the legendary hero of the Xia dynasty.
Okay.
It was kickstarted, and now Renegade has it. I didn't know much about it, except that it had that cool, look of their...
It's like a feudal Chinese kind of setting.
Yeah. So, you're trying to stop an impending flood and defend your growing village against neighboring barbarian tribes.
Raina, I know you said growing village, but it sounded like you said groin village.
Your groin village.
I went to the doctor one time, and I was like, I'm having some problems down in the groin village.
He's like, please never use that term again, sir.
Can you send in some guys to check out the village?
The barbarians are encroaching on my groin village. Anyway, it's got an 8.3 on Board Game Geek, which is pretty solid, especially with over 2,000 reviews.
Thematically, if I can get past that bit of stupidity there. Uh-huh. That sounds super cool.
Yeah.
And a solo game where...
It's a solo game with a campaign mode. So they'll change, and you can reset it. So it's almost like a solo legacy game that you can reset. I'm convincing myself to buy this game as we speak.
I've done that to myself several times lately. Randy, remember when I was kind of going through the Spider-Woman graphic novel recently?
Yeah.
And I was
we'll talk about that too.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I convinced myself to buy it.
Yep.
That art was just too hot not to.
Dave, we're too good at this. We can't turn it off.
I've done this with board games and RPGs and stuff before, too. I have essentially given somebody the main points that I think are what's cool about something, and I was like, that really is
pretty
cool.
You can't have this. I'll buy it.
It does sound cool, Randy. You should go ahead and buy it. Tell me it's cool, and then I will buy it or borrow yours and never return it.
While we're talking about games that came in last week, we also have a game called Archaeos Society, which is... it was an Asmodee, I think, came from Asmodee Games. You gather the best teams to win the archaeological race. This one's doing pretty well at Board Game Geek as well. You are determining whether to form small expeditions for quick expeditions or larger expositions that are more efficient but slower to assemble.
Interesting.
And then you launch these expositions with match colors and try to, like, explore regions. Sounds like a fun idea.
You know, the only archaeology funding game that I've played before is the two-player game Lost Cities, which is a very fun game, and also uses some color matching stuff. Now, it is extremely abstract. This, I'm guessing, is less abstract. Does it, like, actually have, like, oh, picking who the archaeologist
yes,
is
yes,
and
this,
stuff
this
like that?
Have some
like, we need a spelunker guy. We need a mountain climber guy.
We need a spelunker.
Give me a spelunker.
Give me a spelunker to explore my groin village.
They're again, encroaching.
Again, so I'm going to ask you to never use that phrase ever again.
yeah, I'm sure that's going to happen.
And then we have Behext, which is an asymmetrical deck-building game where you're basically sorcerers warring against one another, and you're sort of like spelling and counterspelling.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. And we got a reprint of the game Skull, which is a card matching game that's a really big popular game.
Is that the one that had that cover that kind of looked like the iconography of Dia de los Muertos?
Yes, in fact, it's got a bonus, like a little bonus pack with it right now, too.
Ooh.
People should buy that before it runs out.
Yeah.
We have Free RPG Day. We got all our Free RPG stuff in. We haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but that is coming up on June 24th. You can come out and get like two or three free RPGs from a variety of publishers.
Yep.
Probably next week we'll have a bit more of a breakdown on that.
Yeah.
That's
always exciting to get anything that kind of like... You know what I like about Free RPG traditionally is that it kind of like celebrates... although there has been like Pathfinder and other big companies represented there, it tends to celebrate the slightly more off the beaten path ones.
It does. Well, notably, Wizards of the Coast has never participated.
Right.
Like, D&D isn't involved in it. It is everything else. Like, I think Root was in there. Avatar is in there.
Yep.
I still have a thing that had the Transformers and Power Rangers.
I still have a Warhammer 40K one that I want to run at some point, an adventure. So sometimes they'll just do an adventure or an adventure that will, like, teach you the roots, rudiments of the game.
It's sort of a quick start for the rules.
Absolutely.
Kind of yeah, and the Modiphius will be in there this year. I don't know if they'll have Homeworld or if they'll be teasing their new futuristic robot setting. Yep. Looks like very Horizon Zero Dawn kind of.
And if it's a traditional, there will also be a few little tchotchkes, like one dice tower we can give away, and a few packs of dice, and just a few other just odds and ends. But yeah, people should go ahead and set that day aside to come out and get a few goodies.
And then a month after that, July 15th, we'll be doing our first, hopefully first of many, board game days.
Yeah, it's like a learn-to-play kind of day.
Our staffer John and I will be teaching games. We have two tables running. Yep. You can sign up for it now. The tables mostly have spots for four people. We have set the schedule. You can find that online. But the schedule, in short, we're going to run Azul, Star Realms, Flamecraft, Starship Captains, Namiji, Horrified, Clank, and Marvel Dice Throne.
Yep.
So a bunch of games.
I've played like a third of those, maybe, and would recommend. And I know you and John are both very good at like outlining a game quickly. So,
well, John is. I'm terrible at it.
you move your piece around and you just like do what.
Have you ever played like Monopoly? Well, this is nothing like that.
No, and I think you know none of these games are like super deep dives,
no.
They all should be approachable.
We've set the two more complicated ones, sort of to give a little extra time, was Flamecraft and Starship Captains,
mm-hmm.
both of which are really good games, but they give them a little more time. Mostly it's like an hour-long slot. It's not a crazy long time to commit to. Come try them out. And if you don't want to play, if you're like, I don't want to play in public, it's intimidating, you can come watch.
Yep.
Assuming that enough people show up. If not enough people show up, we will try to drag you enough watching to play the game.
Yes.
All right, let's talk comics for the first couple weeks of June.
Okay.
Let's start with the Robots in Disguise. Let's start with Void Rivals.
Okay.
I think this is probably... I mean, it's my favorite.
I think this would be a pick of the week for all the managers. We actually really liked this.
Against all odds, by the way, because...
We were all very cynical about it.
So just first of all say, this is by Robert Kirkman.
And Lorenzo De Felici?
Yeah, really cool artist who he worked with previously.
Oblivion Song.
So yes, you got the creator of The Walking Dead and Invincible. So that's the biggest selling point right there, maybe. It is a sci-fi book, but we have known for, a year or whatever, that the G.I. Joe and Transformers were going to go to Image.
There were rumors that Skybound had it, but they had not confirmed or locked it
down. Right, and we had no idea what format it was going to take. Then, like, just recently, we kind of found out a little bit, which was that it was going to be a shared universe.
Literally the day after we put our final orders in.
I was going to say, Kirkman likes to do those kind of, like, here's a new book by me, it's you know...
He pulls some gimmicky sales stuff, but sometimes it's interesting, and I kind of got to give some credit. Like, At one point, they just sent us his, like, I forget which one it was.
Die, die, die.
Based on our numbers for some other book he sold, they're just like, here's the first issue free for people to have.
I understand why he couldn't do that, but I do wish he'd given us some kind of free overship or something, because they're supposed to play fair with us on giving us information to order things.
Sure.
But he wants to keep the spoilers, and so some retailer would talk to Bleeding Cool and it'd be all over the place. And that did, in fact, happen the week before this all came out.
But it's not exactly common knowledge. I haven't heard people talking about it. And here's the thing. When we heard it, I don't think any of us were like, even though we all have relatively high degree of fandom for both Transformers and G.I. Joe, I don't think any of us were like, gee, I really want to see them put together in the same universe. I remember IDW tried that some years ago, and I wasn't real big into it.
Well, they also tried to incorporate, like, ROM.
Micronauts, Mask.
Well, I think all of us were skeptical. None of us are huge Robert Kirkman fans. We all like his stuff.
Right, there's no doubt that he's got some craft.
But I think none of us were excited about this. We were definitely a little skeptical. And slowly but surely, as we each read it in turn, we're like, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
It's not just a Transformers.
It is not a Transformers. The Transformers thing is almost a cameo at this point. It won't be going forward. Yeah. But this is a standalone sci-fi premise. I don't want to give too much away. But basically, if you know the film Enemy Mine, it's got some of a vibe of that. It's like a pair of enemies stranded on a planet because they're in the middle of an interstellar war, and what happens when they're forced to work together.
Right. This is a kind of a, like, that's a tropey premise. If you told me just that, I would have been like, I've seen that story before. But his version of it is intriguing. The art is fantastic on it. And the way, you know, you sort of see it butt up against a little bit of Transformers stuff sort of before all is said and done is pretty cool and made me think, oh, what a weird thing. This is G.I. Joe and Transformers comics coming up, and I actually don't know how this is going to all play out. There is definitely going to be some surprises in here.
Yep.
Awesome. I'm still a little, like, I'm like, I don't really want that level of sci-fi in my G.I. Joe. But I'm like, well, maybe they could convince me.
Yeah.
Based on this, I'm like, now I'm open to the possibility. It surprised me.
But this is a new series by Kirkman that is going to be...
It's going to be its own thing.
Its own thing. It's also going to incorporate some ideas from, like, and guest stars here and there.
Yeah, if I were to, like give a random example, let's say that there was somehow going to be a shared universe that was going to have Star Trek stuff running up against Battlestar Galactica's dark stuff. And then there was, like, an original property that was created by somebody that was, like, what bridged the storylines or set them all up. We don't even quite know how it's all going to work. This is that third thing.
Yeah.
So, like, even if you were... Almost it feels like if you were to just read this as, like, oh, Robert Kirkman's doing a new sci-fi book with some kind of cool sci-fi stuff. That's what it is.
That's what I was going to say, is even if you take the Transformers element out of it, and you could, because it's pretty small, he's got, like, two interesting cultures. They've got weird religious things. And they're clearly at war, and they have these things they don't know. It reminds me a little bit of what Vaughn was doing with Saga, like building up the notion of, like, these two alien worlds.
But also, like, there's like the survivalist stuff they show you sometimes in detail in this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a really fun first issue.
I never played it, but my brain was like, considering that game you played where you were like going from planet to planet in the plane or in the spaceship. That you could...
Oh, talking about No Man's Sky?
Yeah, it kind of had a little bit of that vibe.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you have to, like, repair and stuff.
I think
one of
the most important things for me, though, is the way that the art sort of is able to breathe and tell the story. The action is really, really good. There's a scene where it starts as, like, very small, and then it, like, bleeds into this giant, like, two-page splash.
Yeah.
It's just... It's so good.
Yeah. So, just to remind people of the title, Void Rivals, you know, I assume that that's referring to the two leads in this, the Rivals, the Enemy Mind dudes. And there's some, even by the end of the first issue, there's a kind of a few cool mysteries that have unfolded.
Yeah.
As well as things like, of course you're like, well, how is this going to play out? What does this even mean? The very last comic I expected to be kind of excited about was this one.
And if you're a Transformers fan, the cameo in here is pretty great.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other big return this week, and that is Battle Chasers, number 10. this has been a little bit delayed. Number 9 came out roughly like 15, 16 years ago.
Yeah. Battle Chasers was the written and drawn by Joe Madureira, who in his time was like made a big splash in a very short period of time in comics. Did he start out on Impulse?
I think that maybe you're right.
Then
no, Impulse was Humberto Ramos.
Okay, you're right. But he was like, he'd done some Marvel and DC stuff.
Worked on Generation X, actually, I think.
Generation X, and then he did a run on X-Men.
Yeah.
Because I had that.
Yeah.
He did Weird Nose Face Wolverine.
Yes.
But this was like his own project over at Image, and it was him basically doing a spin on like a JRPG like Final Fantasy.
Yes.
They, to the point that when he abandoned the comic industry and went into video games, they eventually made a video game of it that was in that sort of Final Fantasy style.
Yes.
And it was well received. But he did abandon the comic industry, and it's funny.
Number 9 came out in August of 2001, by the way.
2001.
So we are about 22 years after.
You have to be at least of a certain age to even know what it is.
Yes.
Was that actually drawn by him, or was that when he had given it to other artists?
Let me see.
Because
I think that was his last
because
one.
Because the trade has, I think, 6 or 7 issues.
I think that came out a year or two ago.
And it collects all of it, and Adam Warren does, like, the last 2 issues.
So, no, John Marrera is listed as the artist on number 9.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, Nick, that bonus material in the trade paperback was, like, a little kind of, almost like hey, remember this, that came out, like, a couple years back, I
2011.
Think. 2011. Oh,
no.
Back then, I thought.
Sorry, that's the anthology that collects all. I don't know when the thing came out, yeah.
Anyway, the details don't matter too much. Suffice to say, It's a fun kind of goofy Final Fantasy story, like based in those tropes with a good set of characters.
Yeah.
And this literally does pick up the story where it left off those decades ago.
Yeah. I will say, smart, if a little dense. It opens with every character you need to know.
Yeah.
And a rundown of each of those, and then the story so far, which I read.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to take in.
Yep. Well, here's the thing. Normally, I would say that's a big no-no in comics, that level of, like, previously on.
Yeah.
But this kind of falls into video game lore.
Yes.
People know what that means. They know that, like, when you get into, like, Mass Effect or the lore of a Final Fantasy game, that there's a lot of lore built up. And sometimes, if you're kind of ready to be on board it, well, then it's fun.
Yeah.
So you had a good time with it, Nick, and you kind of
did.
Just, you jumped in without ever having read any of the previous stuff.
None of it. And it was kind of like a
crash course.
Let's see if it can work.
Yeah.
I don't know if it worked 100%, but it worked enough that I was like,
maybe you'll check out the trade.
These are fun. I will probably go back and to read the originals.
Yeah, well, I meant to check to see if we have, but Battle Chasers Complete has all 9 issues. I don't know if we have it in stock.
Right? We do. We have like 4 copies.
Okay,
in all
right.
It.
Yeah, so, I happened to see it the other day.
Oh, good. So we did order that. Good, good. So yeah, if you read this, and you're like, oh, what went before? Well, you'll be able to do that.
Yes. So I think there are some people who would like it, honestly, just for the Joe Madureira art. If you were a person who liked J. Scott Campbell or Humberto Ramos, or any of the stylized artists.
Or ever played a Final Fantasy game and enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I don't mean just Final Fantasy, I mean any game like that.
Yeah.
Dark
any of those.
Souls?
Dark Souls is more of like, that is like its own specific kind of dark RPG. And this is like Japanese RPGs.
Yeah,
big,
true.
You know, giant swords and a mixture of like steampunk technology and magic and all of that
stuff.
It's
about gauntlets that could like destroy the world. So.
Yeah. But the gauntlets are also used like just to punch things, like punch a giant or punch a werewolf or whatever. like you do.
Give me my punch.
The gauntlets. Main little girl character has a, what essentially is a warforged.
Yep.
An ancient war golem.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you had me at that. I like war golems.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Yeah.
And there's just some cool action and stuff. It's not drawn by Madureira. It is drawn by Ludo Lullaby?
Yeah, which is a similar...
He's in his ballpark.
He's in his ballpark.
Similar Madureira stuff, yeah.
He's kind of one of those artists who makes his big guys really big and muscly and makes his skinny guys really skinny and makes the ladies pretty and wildly buxom.
Yes.
So it is. It has all those things.
All right, let's jump over and talk about DC stuff for the last couple weeks.
Yep.
We've got Steelworks #1, which is a new Steel book. It also features Natasha Irons, his niece.
Yep.
Right, it's niece?
Yeah.
Pretty sure?
Yes.
Does he have a daughter?
No.
I think sometimes I thought that was his daughter.
She's his niece.
Okay.
Are we... Now I'm second-guessing myself.
She calls him Uncle John.
Oh, okay. Well,
so
then there we
sure.
go.
Yeah. Does she call him Uncle Dad John?
She did not call him Uncle Dad John. Steelworks is like they're trying to be the heart of technology and non-super people benefiting Metropolis kind of thing. It's kind of the anti-Elon Musk.
Yes. Somewhat notably, this is written by Michael Dorn,
yep.
a.k.a. Worf.
Worf.
A.k.a. he's voiced Steel before and clearly has a connection to him.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting, like, and I'm sure this was like in working in conjunction with an editor, is that it still did read like a guy who knew DC lore and all that stuff. He's obviously done his homework and stuff.
Maybe Dorn's a big DC fan. We don't know.
He may be. I don't know. A lot of times, you know, like you'll find out that someone was like nerdier than you think, which is always kind of fun. I approve of that.
Yep. We've got this week the Static team up with Anansi. This is a character, I think, from the Static animated series, who is making his way into the comics.
Hmm.
He is a spider god trickster guy. It's kind of cool looking. It's just a one shot, I believe. It is just a one shot. And also, if you want more Milestone, there is the Milestone Initiative New Talent Showcase, which is one of these big, like 90 page giant things. It's $4.
Oh, wow.
They did not highlight that in any way. We didn't know last week.
Oh,
we should put up a sign on it.
Yeah. But yeah, for $4, you get a giant thing of like new writers, new artists, all doing various things.
It was like an actual talent search that they did.
Yep. Well, it was a intern program. They they grabbed 12 writers, 12 artists, and put them in a 10-week training program. And then their final assignments were to do a team up and do stories. So there's 12 stories in here, I guess? Yeah, there are 12 stories in here, all sort of like 8-pagers, shorter stories. But sampling a bunch of different writers and artists.
You can also get, you know, just enjoy the Milestone setting.
Yep.
And you can see these guys before they make it big.
I was going to say, almost certainly one of these people is going to break out and be a big writer in the industry, and you can get their first work here.
Randy, I remember when we talked about this last week, you mentioned that there's little short bios of everybody in the back.
Yeah.
And one of them, it just struck me as I was reading it. It was talking about a woman who, she has like a visual or auditory processing disorder. I forget what it was. And had kind of like been, had trouble with that over the years, but had worked to kind of deal with it. And I was, and she like writes, I think, the first story in there. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. Just, you know, it's always just kind of a Milestone has always embraced creator diversity along racial lines.
Yep.
And I just thought it was also cool to see a support of like neurodivergency.
Yeah.
Marvel
has, as we move into Marvel stuff, they have Marvel Voices Pride. This, I think, is the third or fourth one they've done. They do one every year.
Yep.
They're introducing a new character in this one. I can't remember her name, but she's featured on one of the variant covers. There's also the sort of the gay Spider-Man, Spider-Verse character. I'm trying to see who else got featured in here. But is that maybe Spider? Yeah, there's Gwenpool in there. Whole bunch of different characters by a bunch of different creators. So Nightshade
where's,
is the new character.
Where does Gwenpool land in there?
I think she's bi.
Yeah. Okay. Wasn't sure if she
or
was
maybe
that.
Maybe she's ace?
Yeah.
I got a sense that maybe...
Both of those things seem like possibilities.
It says, everything's coming up aces is the name of the story. So I'm
going to guess that's... I think that's our answer.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a...
just a poker story, actually.
Just like Milestone, this tend to be... They tend to have new creators who have this, like, their first work or early work. So you can get a sense of some people.
Yeah, the up-and-comers.
Yeah. I was looking to see if there was any other... notable characters. Black Cat is in here in a story called Be Gay, Do Crime.
That's perfect.
Which is pretty great. Looks like it may be a Black Cat Gambit team up.
Oh, man.
Which is looks super fun. And
there are no Gambit to specifically be an LGBT character, but if anybody was ever going to be bi, I do feel like he
Black
would
Cat,
fall into
Black
that.
Black Cat is bi.
Black Cat is, but also, I thought Gambit,
Gambit
could also...
Gambit could absolutely...
Could be.
Yes. Gambit's a man-ho.
Yes. I believe he's a ho-ho. He's a ho-ho in all senses. Loves the ladies, loves the guys.
And is chocolate on the outside and cream-filled.
Yes.
Wait.
No. I think he also likes booze and cigarettes, too.
Okay, yes. We have Loki number one from last week. This was a... notably, it features that just crazy ship that's made of the fingernails of the dead.
Yep.
And Loki is the head of the Frost Giants. He's like the king of the Frost Giants now.
Yeah, you told me that, and I thought that was cool. So Thor is running Asgard, and Loki's gone over to the Giants, who, depending on, you know, where things are in mythology, he is oftentimes, you know, he sometimes leads the Giants.
Well, it's funny, because Thor comes to him, and Loki is, like, in Florida, just kicking back.
Yep.
And he's like, aren't you supposed to be king? He's like, they're learning to read. They're all good. And in fact, they're not. They have stolen his ship of dead fingernails.
That sounds kind of fun.
Yeah. It's a fun idea.
This is an ongoing or a miniseries?
This is, I believe, an ongoing, although all Loki miniseries are a miniseries by default.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
We've got Spider-Man India off his Spider-Verse appearance.
Yep.
By, looks like maybe an Indian American creative team.
Do we happen to know, Randy, like, is this specifically based on the Spider-Verse version?
No.
Or is this the...
I think this was done before Spider-Verse came out, but it was definitely okay. Because he was going to be in Spider-Verse.
Right. And we know that, like 10 or 15 years ago, there was already, like, a brief Spider-Man India miniseries that they did. This was even before they had done the Spider-Verse concept. Yep. It was just that there literally was this comic that existed in India.
So. Well, it's interesting. They open with having him in Earth 616 fighting alongside Miles and Peter.
Okay.
And he's fighting, I guess, his version of Mysterio has come through, which is kind of cool.
I saw that. That is, like, very cool. A multi-head, multi-armed Mysterio.
Yeah. It's got some fun art. I like it. But yeah, it's and they're introducing...
If you're riding high on Spider-Verse energy,
yep.
There's that and lots of other options right now.
There's a new Black Panther. I guess at the end of the last run, he has been dethroned. And so they have created this new city that's more of a... It's called the city of Burnin T'Chaka, the northwest corner of Wakanda. So it's like more of a not just the royalty of Wakanda, but like they're going to look at the day-to-day street level of Wakanda.
Okay.
And
I think that's kind
of
cool.
T'Challa has become sort of a vigilante protecting this area.
I think he should become a mall rat like Jubilee was.
I think you're right. That would be great.
He haunts the mean streets of the arcade. He's like, if somebody wants to talk to him, like, try the food court. He'll find you. I have completely misrepresented this book, by the way.
No,
I'm sure he does much cooler Black Panther things.
Dave, that would be so cool. Like, then you've ruined the book because now it can't be that. an 80s mall rat Black Panther would read.
Hey, if we could do the Spider-Verse thing, then that version exists.
Pantherverse.
Somewhere out there in the Pantherverse is Mall Rat Black Panther.
Oh, dear.
And his arch rival is Jubilee.
Yes. Damn it, now I want to see this What If.
I kind of do, too.
Yeah. Okay, moving aside from Marvel, we've got TMNT versus Street Fighters. The TMNT are facing off with everybody lately. There's that Usagi team-up that's going on that's really good.
That's true.
There's a TMNT Stranger Things coming.
That's wild, but it actually perfectly fits. And if the Hawkins Institute did not create the goo or whatever, what are we even doing here? Because I love that idea.
They've also fought Batman.
Yes, they have fought Batman.
Yeah. And that was written by James Tynion.
Yeah.
Like, it is weird the level of quality that you get with Ninja Turtles crossovers. I don't know how it happens.
You know what they've never crossed over with? And this is crazy? Daredevil.
Yeah, I know.
A Daredevil Turtles crossover,
right? I think people know this, but the original Ninja Turtles origin was a slight parody of Daredevil's origin. The very goo that fell into the sewers was the same thing that hit Daredevil and gave him his radio.
Does Marvel
his
does
senses.
Not work with anything they don't own, with the exception of like Fortnite?
It might be the case now.
That's too
Fortnite
bad.
Only Fortnite was big enough.
That's too bad.
So
I would love to see a team.
I think we
all really like this.
Nick, you did read that, or did you get a chance?
I read this. I thought it was great.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I love that they basically open with the tournament already happening.
Yep.
I love that
Guile's fighting Mikey?
No, it's Raphael.
It's Raphael.
Yeah.
The hothead versus hothead.
Right, right.
Yeah, they're both talking trash to each other. They don't mince, don't waste time in this. But in addition to the actual tournament, there is subplot scheming with with Bison
and Baxter Stockman
who he's working with. And it's funny because Guile throughout is kind of like, he's like, these turtles intrigue me. Bison is like, these turtles intrigue me. What can I do with them to advance my schemes? And Baxter's like,
you know,
don't mess with them. Leave them alone.
We don't want them.
Yes, M. Bison and B. Stockman.
Yes.
I actually loved the scene with
Chun-Li
and Mikey.
Yeah, that's fun.
It was a really cool idea behind it.
They're having fun with it. It's off to a good start. And it seemed like a property that should work, but you never know.
Oh, you know what else? TMNT also crossed over with the Power Rangers.
Yep.
That's true.
And the Power Rangers crossed over with Godzilla, but Godzilla should cross over with the Turtles as well.
Power Rangers also crossed
I don't know about
over
Godzilla and the
Justice
Turtles.
League.
They don't usually fight the big guys.
They should team up with him.
Could you do it? Yes. Because what they would then need to do is have Baxter Stockman make a Mecha Mouser.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a giant, like, mountain-sized mouser to fight Godzilla.
They have your own fire today with these ideas.
And the turtles can pilot it. And they have a loose and dangerous team-up with Stockman, and they're like, we're watching you. And he's like, I'm watching you.
I feel like it should be a big version of Krang or something.
Krang can also be involved. Yep. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
It'll be the little Utrom Krang alien inside this giant mecha suit that's as big as, Godzilla. Yes.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Anyway.
These people should go ahead and get in touch with us. You can cut me a check, and I will be your idea man.
TMNT Street Fighter, we all really liked.
Yep.
John Layman of Chew fame has a new book called In Hell We Fight, which involves teenagers from various eras in hell deciding that they're going to knock over an ice cream truck because even though it's hell ice cream, at least it's ice cream, and then they get involved in something bigger.
Huh.
John Layman is such a weirdo, but anybody who's read Chew knows that he makes those, he'll take a goofy premise like that and actually make it pretty intriguing. I don't know if he does it in this, but Chu actually had some actual character and emotional underpinning. It was way over the top, but like there was kind of a reason to want to see what happened with those characters and stuff. And so he does an interesting thing where he'll take a goofy premise and kind of ground it a little too. Yeah.
My favorite thing in this, there's a bit, the two of the characters, one is a kid who was murdered by a cursed axe, so he has a cursed axe in his head. And there's a girl who was a Japanese assassin who used a hatchet as her weapon.
Okay.
And she basically starts taking axes out of his head, and they regenerate because it's a curse.
Uh-huh.
So she gives many. She has an unlimited set of hatchets from his head.
That sounds like something John Layman would come up with.
It was a very funny little bit.
Yeah. Guy who gave us people eating things for powers.
We've got a Barbaric spinoff from Vault called Queen of Swords. And you don't have to have read Barbaric to enjoy this.
No.
Barbaric, for those who don't know, is kind of a barbarian who has a mean talking axe that controls him.
Right. Yes. It's like the axe talks shit.
You read this, Queen of Swords.
And this is about this is a sword that talks.
Okay.
So I think it's a sword in the other one, or is it an axe?
I'm pretty sure it's an axe.
It's an axe in the other one.
Maybe it changes form.
Or maybe there was a sword first.
Maybe so. Regardless,
is it definitely the same weapon?
I assumed it was, or but now I have doubts.
Maybe there's a lot of chatterbox weapons in this setting. I don't know.
Or maybe
all the magic ones do it.
There's a quarterstaff that just like never shuts up.
But this book is about three women, a barbarian, a magic user, and a assassin.
Is this a mother, maiden, crone thing of fantasy?
Joining forces to do a job. The sword is in the barbarian's hands. The sword doesn't believe that a female should wield it. It's kind of got a misogynistic bent a little bit.
Okay.
But she starts, like, hacking away at people, and he's like, oh, I like this.
It'd be like if a sexist sword found its way into Red Sonja's hands.
Yeah, essentially.
And was like, oh.
But apparently there's some characters that have shown up in the Barbaric, and this is where they start. But I didn't need to know any of that. It's very user-friendly, a lot of fun, has some Rat Queens influences a little bit, just kind of that sense of fun and just
women kicking ass. Is it vulgar like Rat Queens is? Is it R-rated?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't mean vulgar as in like, my. I mean like, does it have some fun with
it? Yeah, it's having fun with the R-rating. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it.
And fetch my vapors. I need the fainting couch.
The Dead by Daylight comic, which we've been waiting on for a little bit, comes out this week. This is there's already a board game. We've talked about this.
Yep.
It's based on a video game. It's one of those one versus all kind of thing. There's one person's playing the killer. The other people are playing people trying to escape him.
Yep.
And that is what this book is about. People have been looking forward. There are in-game codes in here.
It's bagged. I can't flip through it.
I don't know what they give you. But, this is a Dead by Daylight comic. From last week, I want to mention, last weekend, this week, there were a lot of notable number twos.
Yep.
Green Lantern number two comes out this week. Spirit World number two, which we all really enjoyed.
Yep.
We've got Groot number two from last week, where they introduce a female Yondu called Yondar.
Yes.
Not Yondu.
That was a weird selection of words. Is the species called Yondu?
No, her name is Yondar, which makes me wonder if she's Thai, because the species has a name, I don't know what it is.
Is she Yondu's sister?
You know, if I was one of them, I'd be Yondave.
Yondave.
It's true.
There was also Shazam number two.
And Shazam number two, yes. And Peacemaker Tries Hard number two,
God, that
which
was so
fantastic.
Long.
Yeah, the Peacemaker book is really good,
Peacemaker number two is a buddy, is a team-up with him and Mashir Mala.
I was going to say, if you ever wanted to see John Cena go on a road trip with a giant ape, that's pretty much
and
what
who
you're
doesn't?
Getting.
Also worth noting, last week was a Tom Taylor Tuesday. We had Dark Knights of Steel, the penultimate issue, which is interesting stuff, and Adventures of Superman John Kent, which continues the Injustice stuff. And there's continues to be really good.
Some very cool stuff is happening in there. If you had been reading those Injustice graphic novels, you need to be reading this. I don't know if there's going to be some big change in the status quo to that universe, but it feels like there could be before this is all said and done.
There could be. This is also, this is a Jed McKay Tuesday, because Moon Knight and Doctor Strange both came out.
Yep.
And last week was also a Ryan North...
Go North, Young Man.
Go North, Young Man, whatever.
Yeah.
Because we had Fantastic Four number 8, which had a really cool little sci-fi premise.
Yeah.
It's a two-parter. It's the first two-parter I think he's really done.
Yeah. Nick, have you read that one yet?
I did.
It's kind of eerie.
It is.
But also has some funny stuff in it, of course, too.
It feels very Doctor Who. I mean...
Very Doctor Who. Or if anybody... There's a certain Star Trek Next Generation episode where... I'll tell you about it later, because I don't want to spoil what the premise is to people. But it was somewhat similar to this with weird reality rewriting stuff.
Yeah.
I really like that I really like that Fantastic Four.
Yeah, it's good.
There's also a number of graphic novels, original graphic novels and collections. So this week we've got Night Fever, the latest Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips. This is not in their criminal universe. It seems to be a... sort of a standalone story of a guy in Europe. He's on a European like business trip, and he gets dragged into the thing with like a maybe assassin type guy or something like that. It reminds me of sort of Collateral across with Eyes Wide Shut. It's like this guy into this strange, strange world that he's not.
Most
used
people
to.
Will say you had me at Brubaker.
Yeah, it's really good. We've got a new graphic novel called Squire and Knight from Scott Chandler.
Like an all-ages thing?
This was an all-ages one. And I don't know where... We've liked Scott Chandler. I don't remember what he worked on other than the stuff he did with Chris Schweitzer.
Was that the pirate stuff?
Maybe. I think so.
Or was that one...
Anyway.
Be that it's a all-ages fantasy adventure thing.
Yep. It has a... there's a knight who's like this bombastic knight, and his squire is a very bookish squire. And in the first couple chapters, the knight... They come upon a village that's been rampaged by a dragon... The knight rides off and disappears, leaving the squire to try and figure out what's going on. And he's, like, doing his little bookish investigations.
Okay, that sounds fun.
It's a really good... And it's got this sort of, like, orange, black and white palette to it that really works. The art is great. The story is fun. There's some goofy moments. I haven't read the whole thing, but I
it seems like the kind of thing that would fit if you've got kids who like the Scholastic books, whether it's, like, Bone or... I don't know, Dog Man and all of that stuff.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It's that age group is the target. I actually think this is one that you don't have to be a kid to like it, but that's going to be, I think, the most target audience.
Isn't the big thing that he did was the Northwest Passage?
Yes, Northwest Passage, which I think a lot of people have not read. It's been out of print for decades.
It's really good, though.
It is really good. And then jumping back to the not for all ages, there is Boys Weekend. By Maddie Lubchinsky, who's the cartoonist who does The Nib. They do some interesting like political cartoons, and I've been reading them for years now.
Yeah.
This is their first original graphic novel, I think, that is about a non-binary person who's called back to be the best man at a wedding for a friend who hasn't seen them in a while, who doesn't really get the gender change. And then they go on a, like, you know, boys' weekend in Vegas, and I believe there's some supernatural stuff involved.
Okay.
This is very good art and looks like a fun premise.
This is, do you know, is it like over the top? Is it funny?
I believe it's funny, but it's also got that heartfelt thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like a, the intersection of, say, someone who's non-binary and weddings and stuff like that feels like something that's, you know, like a legit thing that people are probably trying to figure out right now.
Right. Yeah.
and get that squared away.
Yep.
Figure out what's comfortable for people, what the right thing to do is. And so, this sounds like a fun place to have to look into that.
We've got the newest volume of Something Is Killing the Children, Volume 6.
Yep.
For those who have been waiting on that. We have the newest version of Lore Olympus, Volume 4. We've got Inferno Girl Red, Book 1. For those of you following the Massive Verse, this is another Massive Verse. That's the Radiant Black Universe.
Mm-hmm.
We have Spider-Man Volume 1, The End of the Spider-Verse. That's Dan Slott and Mark Bagley returning to Spider-Man.
Yep.
And then there's a couple trades. The Hood, The Saga of Parker Robbins.
Oh, yeah. That was before Brian Vaughn, like, he's had, or maybe simultaneous, roughly, with Why the Last Man.
It was early on. It was right
but in his early days, and before his current big thing, Saga, he did, Marvel had just started their R-rated naughty line, where people could swear actually, there wasn't too much nudity in there,
there was
but it was
sex in there.
There was some sex, but it was not like there's not a ton of it. It was mainly violence.
It wasn't
and swearing.
Like Money Shot or Cherry.
Correct. But anyway, The Hood was a fun one though, about a like small time mobster, a little low level hood who finds a magical supernatural hood that gives him kind of low level powers.
He's a hood who finds a hood.
He's a hood who finds a hood.
They should call it Hood Squared.
And he's also kind of like the anti Peter Parker. Yes. He's a loser like Peter Parker was, and except he, instead of with great power comes great responsibility, he decides with great power comes great opportunity.
Yes. But also, Peter Parker Robins.
Does
he rob stuff?
Is that the deal?
Probably.
I also thought it was like it's also like a nod to Parker the career criminal from
yes.
the famous novels
and Peter Parker,
and Peter Parker was the definite thing.
Yeah.
One of the things that's kind of endearing about it, as I think you see in the first issue, that although he's a hood, he's actually very sympathetic because he's got like
he's got a pregnant girlfriend, he's got a pregnant mom that he's taking care of.
His mom is in the hospital, and like one of the reasons he needs to like steal stuff is because he can't pay her bills,
right?
And also, Hydra tries to recruit him early on, and he and his buddy are like, hey, you're those racist guys, right? And they're like, yeah. And then he and his buddy, like, beat him up at the bar. And I was like, that is a bad guy I can get behind.
Yeah.
Anybody who stomps a Nazi is A-okay in my book.
Yeah. Anyway, this is all collected. It's got the work of Kyle Hotz on art.
Yeah, the art's really good.
So yeah, we'd recommend
that.
I would say
it's probably the best project Kyle Hotz has ever done.
And then the other thing we were going to recommend was Spider-Woman by Dennis Hopeless. Which Dave talked himself into buying.
Yep, I bought our last copy, but I'm sure we're going to get more
soon.
There's
more coming this next week.
It is one of those big trades. It's probably like around $40 or so. It reprints the full run of his, which includes a miniseries that was tied into the original Spider-Verse that kind of got Spider-Woman back kind of going again.
Yeah, that was the first 5 issues of the series.
And then, oh, that was the actual issues?
Yeah, those.
I thought it was a miniseries.
No, it's issues 1 through 5, and then The Javier Rodriguez run starts at issue 6.
Okay, so right on issue 6, it kind of, I think, becomes what it's going to be.
Yes.
It ceases to be a sort of Spider-Verse comic and becomes its own thing.
Yep, they did a new, there's a new costume, which is awesome. It's the one that the Spider-Verse uses.
And an unusual vibe, without saying too much, is like she's wanting to be less of a... She's tired of being embroiled in these kind of big cosmic events and wild Avengers stuff. She wants to kind of deal with some more down-to-earth... sort of heroics.
Yeah, they want
to
get more on the PI side of things.
Yep. And she ends up teaming up with the long-standing kind of reporter, Ben Urich, from Daredevil.
Right.
And a Z-list villain named the Porcupine, who was one of the founding masters of evil against the Avengers, but ends up being kind of an unusual ally in this.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, well, I don't want to get into too much into it, but...
But also, you may have noticed in the movie, in the Spider-Verse
he's like a
movie,
divorced dad.
You may have noticed in the Spider-Verse movie that Jessica was pregnant.
Yes.
That came from this series.
Yes. Her vibe is not the vibe of the movie,
no,
Jessica
it's different.
Jones. She is much more down-to-earth, but she has, like, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. spy training in her past and her cool powers and stuff. Anyway, it is very much its own unique thing. If you liked... Javier Rodriguez
is the art.
If you liked his art on that recent, was it the Marvel Universe thing he did, or what, History of the Marvel Universe?
Recent was like 5 or 10 years ago, but yeah.
Sure, that's recent. And then he also, did he do a Doctor's, no, he did some Defenders stuff,
Yes, he did the Defenders.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, he's a super good artist who kind of defies a lot of, I think, convention and is good at drawing like old school Marvel characters in particular.
Yeah.
So I think that's very much one, like, the writing is good, but it's also, like, if you might just approach it, like, from the artist, too. So.
The year this was published, which was a few years back, this was one of my best, it was in my top 10 comics of the year.
Yeah.
Like, I loved this comic, and I'm glad they got a collection of it. I already had the older collections, which have been out of print for a while. I think this is very much worth people's time.
Yeah, it's cool that you could, like, something like this, which would otherwise take, like, back in the day, a lot of tracking down of back issues to get it all, you can get the full run in one fell swoop.
Yeah, and I would recommend you do. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to talk about some news, and then we'll come back and talk about Spider-Verse. All right, we want to real quick go over a few trailers and then a little bit of comics news before we jump into talking about
Spider-Verse.
So let's start with the comics news. Let's start with J. Michael Straczynski is coming back to Marvel Comics.
Right, I forgot about this.
either enthusiasm or fear, depending on what you last remember him for.
Right. So, he is perhaps best known for the first half of his Spider-Man run, which introduced Morlun. Mm-hmm. At the time, the return, first-time return of John Romita Jr. to Spider-Man in some years, and was really pretty beloved. Mm-hmm. But then ended poorly with one more day.
One more day, yep.
Which all but ruined Spider-Man, although everybody knows that was also a bunch of mess from editorial.
I was gonna say, that was
it can't all be blamed on him. Anyway, JMS's history in comics is certainly, I'd say, checkered.
But also remember that he did Thor, and people really liked his Thor run.
He basically saved Thor.
Yeah.
And so it's like that Thor, the Asgard in the Midwest and stuff like that, elements of that made its way into the Thor movie.
And then editorial demanded that he be a part of a big crossover. And JMS is like, oh God.
So that's probably going to happen again, because Marvel learns nothing.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But. The opening part of it, the JMS thing about Captain America is interesting. Captain America is a character that they've had trouble with lately. Like, the last great run was probably Brubaker's run.
I think that's probably the last memorable run.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I was like trying to think of other. I mean, there's been stuff. I mean, I like Nick Spencer's run, even though that was a little controversial.
Yeah,
I liked that. There's stuff. Some people are really enjoying the new.
We definitely liked his Falcon. Yeah, the Falcon Cap run. Yeah. By Spencer.
Some people are really enjoying the current Symbol of Truth, Sentinel of Liberty stuff. But Jesus Sayas is going to be the art, which means it'll be gorgeous.
He's a good artist. JMS is one of those guys, as like, I haven't seen his writing in a bit, but he also, like, Randy, you love Sense8.
Yeah.
You were always talking about that. Like, you wouldn't shut up about that.
Yeah, it's true.
Now, that was working with the Wachowski sisters. I don't know who was doing what. I think there might have even been other writers involved.
In general, though JMS has dropped the ball on a few things in a big notable way,
right?
Overall, I consider myself a fan of his. I like a lot of his stuff.
So sure.
I'm excited about this. I'm also a fan of Captain America.
And it's arguably a little bit of JMS's year because the Babylon 5 is getting that animated movie, which we've talked about.
Right. I'm kind of excited about this news.
Yeah. Working with this, with a really good artist helps bump my interest up.
And then they also announced a book called Avengers Inc. that is by Al Ewing and Leonard Kirk on art. Kirk, speaking of really good artists, that guy's a really good artist. This is an interesting premise. It is going to be sort of a noirish Avengers book. It's not really Avengers. It's Wasp working with Victor Shade, a.k.a. The Vision, and he's playing sort of a villain version of himself. And they're investigating sort of
conspiracy. Wait, sorry, rewind on that. That was an alias The Vision used.
Yes.
Right? Is this The Vision?
Yes.
But he's going by Vic Shade.
He's going by Victor Shade.
Okay.
He's doing more of a noir kind of thing.
Okay, okay.
And the two of them are going to be investigating sort of conspiracies in the Marvel Universe.
I don't know. Oh, just the two of them?
Just the two of them.
Oh, I thought it was like a team.
No, just the two of them.
Huh. You know, Wasp, depending on how you portray her, she's always been a wealthy socialite. There is, in fact, a long history of, like, wealthy socialites in, like, noir and mysteries, like, you know, the Thin Man movies and stuff like that.
Yep.
You're like, a lot of times these guys, it seems like they solve mysteries because they have money and they don't have anything to do, and they're like, you know, I'm going to go solve a murder mystery.
I'm going to solve a mystery with a martini in my hand.
Yep, I'm sure the police won't mind my help.
That sounds like something Janet would do.
But that does seem like a potentially fun idea. I like The Vision, and I'm open to that incarnation.
And Al Ewing's hit and miss, but he's more hit than miss. Like, in general, I think we've liked it. So.
What's his biggest thing lately? The Hulk stuff?
Yes.
That was him on Immortal Hulk.
He's also going to be doing Immortal Thor, so he's got a couple big things coming up. Yeah, I'm excited for this.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Okay, so we watched some trailers. Let's start with the video game one. We watched the trailer for Star Wars Outlaws, which is the Star Wars game that's from Ubisoft. They're the guys that did the current one, right? Fallen Order? Isn't that Ubisoft now?
I am so bad at remembering video game company names.
I don't think it is.
Is it not? Okay. I don't know. Anyway, I think this is going to be gameplay like that. It's not a gameplay trailer, it's a story trailer.
Right. So this is all like cinematics that are at such a high level that it's basically like a film.
It introduces a new character, Kay Vess. She is a... It's interesting that she is a femme lead.
Yeah.
And that is causing, of course, some consternation amongst the gamer bros.
Why would it? Star Wars has a long tradition of pretty brunette femme leads.
Yeah. Anyway,
Rogue One, one of the ones that people actually like, has just that.
People like it, Dave, but Chud incels don't.
Oh, yeah. Well, they should all go fuck off.
I see somebody calling it Grand Theft Tatooine.
Yeah, it is.
If it is open world like that, like, and you can take on missions like that.
But there's a story to it. I mean, yeah. It's Grand Theft out of that, but there is a story to it. She is pulling a big heist for somebody. Looks like maybe on Canto Bight, the casino planet from Last Jedi.
Yep.
She has a cute axolotl looking pet.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a gambler. She's on the run from bounty hunters.
So it sounds very Mass Effect in its scope, because it's set in an open world. The game will feature stealth and open combat, vehicle combat, space combat, and branching dialogue. Hmm.
Yeah,
Mass Effect didn't really do stealth much though.
Not really, but occasionally.
Yeah,
occasionally.
Basically, once you got noticed, you were in the fight.
But anyway, this looks to me. This is what I want. I like the idea of what they call the Outer Rim adventures of Star
Wars. Yeah, an outlaw that actually right now interests me more than the Jedi stuff. The last Jedi game that came out, what's it called? The sequel to Fallen Order.
Oh, Jedi Survivor.
I liked the previous one okay, but I didn't want to.
I really liked that game.
I liked the story. I got to, Nick knows, by the end, I got to sometimes hating the combat in it because it got the difficulty went up.
Well, we both put our difficulty to easy, and we don't typically do that.
I do not normally do that. I will say I am not a Dark Souls guy, and I know that probably compared to that, it's probably still easy, but it was influenced by Dark Souls and those kind of games.
Some of those like boss battles were punishing.
Yeah, and I don't, get to my age, you don't want to like spend like all day learning how to beat one fucking boss battle.
So this sounds kind of cool. It's set between the events of Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Players take control of outlaw scoundrel Kay Vess and her companion Nix, the little dog creature, voiced of course by Dee Bradley Baker, who does every voice possible.
I thought you were going to say it was
as they attempt one of the biggest heists the Outer Rim has ever seen. It's a fun idea.
I thought you were going to say it was Wash. He likes the voice.
Alan Tiddick.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like, to some degree, there's always a certain sameness to Star Wars trailers. Like, they show a Rancor roaring. You saw her escaping on a speeder bike. I'm like, I've seen speeder bike escape since 1983.
Yeah.
But, like, the universe still is a persistently fun playground, mm-hmm. I think, or sandbox. And that, it kind of got my attention. She looks like a fun, likable, you know, like, kind of in that trope of likable scoundrels like Han Solo. Would I want to play that character in a game? Yes. Do I, you know, the kind of stuff that you're going to be doing, which is probably going to be a little bit more stealth and less choppy-chop with the blade and big force fights. That actually all sounds better to me.
I look forward to watching my son play this game. That's how I play the Jedi game. He's currently going through Mass Effect. That is my gaming right now. I watch my son play video games.
Fair. You should find some game, but...
The company that's doing this is Massive, which is a subsidiary of Ubisoft.
Okay.
Randy, you're going to do the Spider-Man game, right?
Probably.
But they're the people who did, like, a couple of the Tom Clancy games, and the more recently they did the Avatar Frontiers of Pandora.
Okay, all right.
Which I think was pretty well received.
Well, the thing is, I don't have a PS5, but once Spider-Man 2 comes out, I will have a PS5, so this will probably be the next game I buy.
I don't play video games enough.
I can't accept that it's the only way to play that game, and I love Spider-Man so much.
How much is a PS5 these days?
It's like $500.
Is it that much? I don't know. Maybe I wanted a PS5. Anyway.
I mean, I thought it was, but maybe
I thought they'd come down.
If they were to drop to $400, jeez, that's
a
lot.
It's still a lot.
But, like, just the other day, that artist Devin Kraft, I think, talking about the new Final Fantasy game and saying that their trailer for the new one that just came out, like, looked really good. I have on-again, off-again love for that, and it's a PS5 exclusive. We're starting to run up against the era, the point where I can't find stuff on a PS4. It's going to have to be a PS5.
You're either going to PS5 or you're not console gaming anymore. Yeah.
Right, and I'm a console gamer, so I will probably try and find a way to do it.
Difference. There's the regular console, which is 5. Then there's something called the PlayStation 5 Digital Edition.
Yeah, which doesn't have a disc drive.
Okay, so, and that's $359.
See, that's what I'd get. I don't need discs anymore. I just buy games on digital.
Same here.
Yeah, so.
I mean, I always run into the problem of, like, the space on the hard drive.
You just get an external hard drive.
Yeah.
It's simple. I've got one on my PS4. We never run out of space.
Yeah.
My solution is, if it's a game that I don't think I'm going to be playing for a while, I have no problem deleting it. you keep the saves.
Yeah, you
which
re-download
is, it. Like, when you delete a game, it does it. It knows to keep the saves. You don't even have to ask it to do that.
Yeah.
Also, the hard drives are pretty huge now.
And then I just, like, when I, if I should be like, oh, you know, I feel like playing Skyrim again, because that's a game that takes up a lot of space.
Yep.
I'll just re-download it while I'm, when I go to bed or something like that. It's all ready the next day.
Red Dead Redemption. That thing was freaking insane. Like, the amount of space it needed on the hard drive.
Yeah. But, like, these days, like, I game a fair amount, and I don't really run up against any serious problems. Sometimes I do need to make space for a new game when I download it, but usually there's something that can go.
I have not turned my PS4 on in over a year. I don't console game anymore, but
yeah.
I want to play Spider-Man 2. If they would sell me a Spider-Man 2 machine, I would buy that.
I'm currently playing and not at a finishing point for any of them, but Far Cry 6 is that I'm pretty deep into. I'm playing the indie game Dredge, and I'm also retro gaming it with Alien Isolation periodically.
Yeah.
So I guess I do play some games.
You do. Out of all of us,
yeah,
you play
yeah,
most.
I played one game last year.
Kind of dabbling.
I have Steam, and I've been playing Midnight Suns. That's it. That's all I play.
And Marvel Snap. But
Marvel Snap doesn't count because it's a phone game. But anyway, so yeah, that's. But this game looks fun.
Yeah, I have to admit, it's kind of got my interest a little bit.
Yep.
So we should real quick run down, not spend too much time on it, but we did watch The Expendaffordables.
You should tell people what you're even saying.
Expendables 4.
What letter in it is replaced with a 4?
The A in Expendables is a 4.
Right, so in the tradition...
Expendaffordables.
In the tradition of Mithrigan...
Yes.
...is Expendaffordables.
So, I don't know when the last Expendables was. I think I saw the first one, never watched any others.
Yeah,
I think it's not a franchise that any of us fell into.
When
it began, at least, originally, it was just a bunch of all the old-timer action heroes, right?
But the thing is, it's like the 90s old-timer heroes. I thought this was going to be League of Extraordinary Gentlemen of the 80s action heroes.
Yeah.
But, like, there was no...
They didn't have Arnold, right?
Arnold was in it for a second. He's the guy who, like, hires them.
Yeah.
I think Bruce Willis was maybe not in it. Mel Gibson was crazy at that point.
So what you got is Stallone...
Dolph Lundgren.
Van Damme?
I think Jet Li, Van Damme, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Van Damme was in it, I know.
And then Jason Statham was, like, the modern guy.
Well, they also had, like, Jet Li
But, so this adds Megan Fox and 50 Cent.
I feel like Megan Fox, for suffering through Michael Bay's creepiness for a few Transformers movies, probably deserves to kick some ass.
Yeah. But I think none of us are... Like, this looked like a Fast and Furious trailer. I understand. For fans of the franchise, I'm sure this is very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jason Statham, the fact that he's in, like, the opening, like, half 30 seconds of the... 30, 40 seconds of this made it... I was like, is this Fast and Furious?
No, he's just in a lot of stuff.
He's just in a lot of stuff.
He is the Transporter. He is in Fast and the Furious.
Meg. Was he in Ruse de Guerre?
He was in Ruse de Guerre.
What's the actual name of that movie?
Operation Fortune Ruse de Guerre.
Yeah, yes.
He's crossed over to a lot of film universes. Yeah. There may be a Kevin Bacon-style Jason Statham connection.
He is also, though, not always an indicator of quality.
No. Nope.
I will also say Kelsey Grammer was in the third one, so that's...
Sure.
80s action hero Kelsey Grammer?
Sure.
Well, he's in, like, current, like, VOD action films.
Really? Is that what he's doing?
Oh, yeah.
Aren't they doing a new Frasier show?
They are.
He doesn't need those anymore. He can...
Now he doesn't.
But also, Terry Crews was in a couple of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think any of us were real enthused, but the trailer's fun.
It's fun. Yeah.
It's got the kind of ridiculous stuff that they do in Fast and Furious movies now, including some scene where they're on, like, the deck of, an aircraft carrier
and
or something
all
like that.
It was sinking.
It looked to me like they were, like, making it lean. I didn't know what was happening. A hard turn where it was, like a motorcycle lean into a turn.
But anyway, if you liked Expendables and Expend2bles and Expend3bles, Expend4bles is coming.
Yes.
We watched the trailer for Lioness. Taylor Sheridan has another TV show.
Yep. Real quick, Taylor Sheridan, what are his big shows? All his main
Yellowstone,
shows?
Mayor of Kingstown.
1883. 1883.
1923.
1923.
1923.
And Tulsa King, yes.
Yeah,
does he sleep?
I don't know.
Does he just live on cocaine?
Well, he's got the Lioness, and then Yellowstone is ending, and he's starting a new one with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
So one thing I've noticed is that the casting has gotten increasingly impressive as far as, like, the people he can bring
people
in. People who are not TV people at all, like Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren were the 1923 leads.
And in this, he's the big ones are Morgan Freeman, and Nicole Kidman.
And
Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana. And Zoe Saldana. Yeah.
And so this is like a kind of like CIA, possibly sort of black ops-ish thing.
Yeah.
And the kind of complicated sort of backroom politicking and stuff around it, too.
Lioness is a freelancer for the CIA, it looks like, and that's what Zoe Saldana is. And the pitch they give in the trailer, basically they are women operatives who get close to wives and daughters and girlfriends of powerful targets, and then they kill the target.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea.
It is.
And it looks like it's going to get into the complications of Black Ops.
It looks very much like a Bourne Supremacy or Bourne Ultimatum, kind of, where they did get a little bit more into the backdoor drama of, like, behind the scenes.
What I wonder is if any of these will ever really be, like, show, like, the really nasty side of things. The, you know...
Sheridan probably could. He definitely...
Burning allies, you know, destabilizing regions.
Mayor of Kingstown definitely showed, like, shitty cops.
Messed up the prison systems were.
How bad the prison system was. So,
do you Mayor of
I do.
Kingstown? I haven't watched the second season yet, but the first season was great.
I don't think we finished the second season.
I need to watch it.
I really like Jeremy Renner, and he does a really good job of playing kind of a...
He's like a liaison with the prison?
Yeah, he's like a weird go-between.
They're like fixers, basically. Yeah. Like, his family's been a fixer, and his mom is continuing education inside the prison, and she has nothing to do with them. She's, like, really disappointed.
But they're still their sons.
But they're still their sons, yeah. It's really good. Diane Weiss plays his mom, and she's great.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of like a look at how shitty the cops and the prison system and...
The first season ends with a big riot and the hostage situation.
It's a bleak show.
It is, but it's really good.
You're, this has sort of been on the back burner for me for a while, but I wasn't likely to get around to it. That all sounds pretty good. I like a bleak show sometimes.
Also, Sheridan's dialogue is fantastic. Like his writing and the people he gets in his writer's rooms. Like, his Tulsa King was just super gripping.
I still need to watch
Mayor of Kingstown, super gripping. 1883 was really good. I have yet to watch Yellowstone. It's on my back burner.
1923 is good too.
And 1923 is on my list too. So.
But he's probably not going to drop the ball.
No.
He also gets the budgets. I mean, this does not look like a cheap show.
No, it does not. Had definitely vibing off the sort of Tom Clancy movies, clandestine operations.
I did hear an interview with how he gets all these people. He just invites them to his ranch. He flies them out to his ranch and doesn't take no for an answer.
That's how he got
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford. I'm picturing him tied to a chair with a black bag over his head.
Although I feel like
the Casino Royale scene.
Yes.
Although I feel like Harrison Ford flew out to him.
So yeah, probably. I mean, Harrison Ford also has his own ranch where he probably kidnapped people. So.
Yes.
Anyway, it looks fun. The last trailer to talk about is a little more fun, and that is My Adventures with Superman.
Yeah.
Which is a new take, a sort of anime influence take, but not like... I didn't feel super anime, but it's a little lighter, and
it had actually sort of the look of the slightly lighter anime that's action adventure stuff, like, I don't know, My Hero Academia, where you get those kind of like the goofy, awkward expression on the hero's face, like, oops.
Yeah.
So this is like a Superman Year One, his first year in Metropolis.
He is an intern.
At the Daily Planet, which I think is a fun idea.
Alongside Jimmy, he and Jimmy are the same rank, which I think is really interesting.
Yep.
And Lois is maybe like a cub reporter, essentially.
Oh, I thought she was a full-on reporter.
Everyone feels very young in
this.
She's
trying to get her big break, and her big break is figure out who Superman is alongside her team, Jimmy Olsen and Clark Kent.
So she's higher up than them. She's higher up enough to be like, I'm going to like train you guys, but like not high enough so that she's like the star reporter yet.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a fun dynamic. It's going to basically be that's their team, Lois, Jimmy, and Clark.
And their Superman stuff looks good, too.
The animation is really good.
Adult Swim thing that is going to premiere on Adult Swim, and then a day later it's going to be on Max.
Yeah. Okay. I think that looks fun.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Spider-Verse and probably some other stuff. Okay, let's do this one last time.
It's very appropriate in this case.
We are going to give spoilers right now. If you have not seen Across the Spider-Verse, what's wrong with you? Seriously, I've seen it twice already.
We can all recommend it. Dave's recommendation comes least because I had some issues with it. But I still think it was well made, and I think people are going to really like it. Yeah. So you go ahead and see it. Then come back for the convo.
If you are not fully enthused for Spider-Verse... The person you want to talk to at this store is Dave.
That's right.
If you love Spider-Verse like all decent people,
Unless you're one of those people who's like going to tell me that you like hate Miles or something like that, because I'm not going to get in on that.
You know,
I'm not going to get in on that conversation.
No. But you like all the characters.
Yeah, this in my case a lot of my stuff just comes down to sort of like tone in the same way it did for the first one, which is to say, you know, when they do the kind of goofy stuff where there's big chase scenes and people are doing goofy silly stuff and
it's a little too much chaos for you.
In the first one, when he was running around with unconscious Peter in him, I was like, that's just a little too goofy.
I think the theater full of laughter made you dislike it all the more.
Probably.
You're like, what is wrong with all these
people? I'm like, be serious. Spider-Man is serious. No, actually, for people who are like Spider-Man himself does joke, but the tradition really, I would say, up until kind of Bendis's era, was that he wasn't quite as quippy all the time.
Yeah. I guess for me, the Raimi Spider-Man was as close to the gritty side of Spider-Man as I ever wanted to get. And I didn't like that because he never quipped in the Raimi Spider-Man. And so I was waiting for a Spider-Man that was jokey. And I can totally see the argument that he's too jokey now, whether it's ADHD Spider-Man in MCU or the rapid fire jokes and everything's a joke in this. But I think if you're going to overcorrect for me, I'd rather overcorrect in the humor direction.
Right. And I would rather overcorrect into serious angst direction.
Yeah.
Now, let's get to the actual movie.
Yes. So, Nick, you weren't here last week. You didn't get to weigh in on it. And none of our listeners were here last week either, so they don't get this all new then. But I think you and I both are in the same place. Like this better than Into the Spider-Verse?
I like it better than Into the Spider-Verse. That's not knocking Into the Spider-Verse.
No, Spider-Verse is genius.
But I will also say this is the first 5-star movie I've had this year.
Same. This is my favorite movie of the year by far.
Interesting.
It just accomplished so much.
Yeah.
In that first opening 10 minutes.
I mean, you can do a lot when you're only doing half a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. But I was never bored. I never...
Nope, I was on board the whole time.
You couldn't get bored because the whole thing is like a psychedelic mushroom trip.
I have heard basically, like, this is like an art, like... just a big long, you know, looking at, going through a museum of art, essentially.
In terms of what it's going to do for animation, like, this is kind of like a Pixar movie that probably pioneered a bunch of techniques we will see in various other places.
Probably so.
Actually, by and large, I would say I love the animation. It was also a little bit of sensory overload.
It is.
Yeah, for sure.
Talking about the beginning, I think some of my favorite stuff was... early on for Gwen and early on for Spider-Man, and one of the neat things they did is they upended all our expectations, I think, by beginning with Gwen.
Yeah.
With this really cool drumming sequence over the opening credits was dope.
And Gwen is the narrator for the opening
Gwen
part.
Is the narrator for, like, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes?
Is she the narrator for all of it? No.
No.
No, Miles does take over at some point.
I think he kind of does take over, but yeah.
Although, now that I think about it, again, I don't remember, I don't know if he ever narrates to the audience like he did in the first one. I think Gwen narrates... And then when we see him, I think
there's some there.
You've seen it like 20 times, Randy.
I've only seen it twice so far.
So she gets a big opening sequence with the Vulture and her father. Leonardo da Vulture.
Well, it's also like encompassing her entire kind of career as Spider-Gwen.
We see what happened with Peter. We see it more played out a little bit
more.
With
the lizard and her father.
With a very cool-looking iguana lizard.
Yep.
But yeah, the Vulture scene, which is Leonardo da Vinci...
he's like steampunk Vulture, or like Renaissance era Vulture, alternate world.
Is amazing and it was so unique.
And it was such a I was in love with this movie from moment one when they were in Gwen's universe and it looked like the comic,
right?
It had like watercolor,
There was it particularly evoked that, but with also a bit of its own thing too.
Yeah. But then they overlaid in like the Leonardo da Vinci version, and I'm like, oh. They're doing the two animation style thing even more extent than they did in Spider-Verse.
Yeah, and it actually kind of like, if you think about like what this could have looked like in times past, it'd be like, oh, what if the Fantastic Four showed up and they were animated Kirby style against the Avengers, and you'd be like, oh, now these guys pop in a unique way because they're actually have a different visual style. I think just that notion of allowing a little chaos instead of a fully unified look.
Yeah.
Is probably going to be a big influence on animation.
Oh, sure.
Was that Vulture from 1602?
Maybe. Nope. I mean, I don't think so, though.
I think, you know, a lot of their stuff, sometimes they'll take the very bare bones of something from the comics and put such a spin on it that it's basically their own thing.
No, I know.
Vulture, as far as I know, although there were some 1602 minis, I think, and I didn't read every 1602 side story, I think he was original.
I think he was original. Yeah.
No, I mean, it doesn't matter. It was fantastic.
It was a cool sequence. And then they bring in Issa Rae's Spider-Woman. Yep. And then Spider-Man 2099.
Yep.
From Oscar Isaac. And both really good characters.
He's a big poo-poo head. They're,
man, those action sequences of all of them fighting against the Vulture and and like saving the helicopter were just spectacular.
It is.
I think Oscar Isaac did a pretty good job voicing very angst and serious Spider-Man.
Yeah. But he's mean.
Well, you know, when I think about how much, like, say, though, he was wasted in a live-action movie. It was Oscar Isaac, or...
Yeah, he played Apocalypse.
He played Apocalypse, and they dropped the ball on that. Yep. And it's fascinating to see what you can do. It's like, here he's only doing his voice, but they gave him a lot more to do.
Yeah.
Well, he's been three different characters in the Marvel world.
He's been Moon Knight, and Spider-Man 2099 now.
Two wins, one failure.
Yeah. Also, I think I was wary, and we talked about this when we were watching the trailers, I was wary of Spider-Man 2099 as sort of the villain, but they did a good job. They earned his angst. They earned his reason for why he does the way he does things.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that when we get to the second half that we are going to see, I bet, a redemption for him.
We'll see.
And probably an explanation for what happened that it puts a spin on why he's wrong to be locking things down as hard as he could. But I think his motivation is...
You don't think they're
going to
try and justify a police state type of Spider-Man?
I don't think so. but, like, I thought they did a great job with him. He's, like, a big, bulky dude.
Yeah.
He's serious, whereas those are jokey, and they kind of make no light of that. I thought that was really interesting. I like the whole Spider Society thing. I like the idea of the like... We were always wondering, you know, Spider-Verse in the comics came out with the Inheritors.
Yeah.
And that's why there was the Web of Life. Their reason for there being a Spider-Verse is a different and also interesting reason, I thought.
What was the reason?
That he's basically like keeping the canon events.
Oh, right. Yeah, this is where it gets into too big of a meta state for me. And also, I'm not a big crossover guy.
Yeah.
But one thing that kind of did function there, it reminded me of like a massive version of how they did the JLA Watchtower during Justice League Unlimited, where it's like when you go to the Watchtower, you'd see like Shining Knight and Vigilante walking by and Shazam would fly by, and you'd just be like, oh, that's just, they have access to all of these people.
Yeah.
Yes, you go to this place and you see Spider-Cat.
You see Spider-Cat and a bunch of weird stuff.
And Cowboy Spider-Man.
Cowboy Spider-Man.
And live-action John Glover?
No.
What's his
Donald
name?
Glover.
Donald Glover.
Also the Spider-Mobile.
Yeah,
Spider-Mobile.
but I thought using Donald Glover was really interesting. That was a nice little bit. And there were a lot of little Easter eggs like that.
Oh, yeah, there's Donald Glover.
There are some wheels within wheels within this.
They had Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield.
And Lego
Spider-Man.
And Lego, that's so cool. It was animated by a 14-year-old who did that Lego trailer for
Spider-Verse. I'm sure people have probably started seeing TikToks or stuff about this, but 14-year-old recreated the Spider-Verse first trailer?
It was the Spider-Verse trailer, yes.
He recreated it all in like Lego, and they were so impressed with him that they brought him on to animate the Lego sequence. Yeah.
Which was really cool.
Yeah.
Pretty
funny because he's like in communication with like Spider-Man 2099 or whatever, and they're like, you're one of our best operatives.
Best, Peter.
And it's like he's got this big goofy Lego face.
Yeah.
This also sort of introduces people, because I'm going to assume very few people knew who the Spot is.
Yeah, their use of the Spot is really interesting. Jason Schwartzman is a great voice for him.
It's definitely their own take on it too.
Well, and they set him up as a doofy non-villain at the beginning, and that's where we all thought he was
going.
Right,
he was like, oh my god, this is my nemesis?
And then they convincingly build him into a nemesis.
Yeah. And they tie him into Miles' origin, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I thought so too. We haven't talked about the best Spider-Man, and that is Hobie Brown, a.k.a. Spider-Punk.
That is true.
Voiced by Daniel Kaluuya.
And he kills it.
Yeah,
he's so
great.
Good.
Yeah, he's got the kind of dry delivery. Yep. He's kind of sardonically punk.
And he's also, he is the one guy on Miles' side the whole time because he's an anti-status quo person, and Miles is trying to tell his own story and not be caught up in what's going on with the Spider-Verse. And so... I really thought that Hobie being like when they're all things are getting tense. I think Spider Gwen's like, you're not helping. He's like, good.
I saw that thing like behind the scenes where they talked about they wanted to have a lead character, kind of an advisor type role, who was anti-establishment.
Yeah, yeah.
Because obviously Spider-Man 2099 is kind of scary establishment, and there's a like constant push pull between Gwen and her dad and Miles and his dad and all that stuff. By the way, also all good work on the part of all the parents and the voice actors.
All the stuff with the parents is really good, and really that's the emotional core of the movie.
So for me, who like I have always. I've never been a big fan of superhero crossover events.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, when they... I kind of started tuning out when they got to all the hundreds of Spider-Men running around. But I actually... I pretty much liked all of the stuff with the parents and all the more grounded stuff.
you know me. I love multiverse stuff. I love crossover stuff. And I love, like, alternate worlds. And so this is all right up my alley.
Yep. No, that's fair.
And also just...
I'm also at a zen, very zen place where I'm like, it doesn't have to all be for me. I will just go meditate.
I really, really enjoyed all of this. Also, the music's great.
Yeah. You know, I didn't think about it a ton, but where I felt like the... Miles' story had, like, a sort of more hip-hop influence. This felt like it was a little bit more like electronica, like EDM kind of
for
music.
Sure.
And it was a cool vibe.
There was more
score
to it, especially the
right, a little bit more traditional scoring.
When they go to, we didn't even talk about when they go to Mombasa, Manhattan,
Spider-Man in
India,
Mumbai/Manhattan.
That they
Karen Sony, which I thought was great.
He's the cab driver in Deadpool 2.
Okay.
He's a comedian, I think.
Yeah, he is.
He's hilarious. I love their take on Indian Spider-Man.
Yeah, he was like the kind of like the cool guy.
Yeah.
The guy who's like, he's like, I've got my life together. What's with you?
He's like, I don't use any hair, any product in my hair. He's like, nothing. Just some coconut oil. It's great.
And his the chai tea. Why would you say chai tea when you're saying tea?
Yes, that really was improvised.
Oh, I mean,
that was they brought him in and they're like, can you give us some touchstones?
Oh, that's cool.
So. But I was going to say, the music on that, that was sort of influenced with sort of Indian, like Bollywood kind of, it's really good. And the same thing when they're fighting Vulture, and it's got this weird, like,
Italian, like some old, Renaissance-y sounding harpsichords and stuff, probably.
There's so many influences in this, and I feel like, I can understand, Dave, why where to you it feels like a cacophony.
Yeah.
To me, it really works. Like, all these elements blend really well for me.
It probably works very well for Generation TikTok. But I say that really not derisively, because I know it works well for a lot of people. It
you
has
know
like
me, Generation TikTok.
Incredibly high ratings across the board. And it's you know, people are, it's the, I think that and the previous one are, like, the two highest rated Spider-Man movies, so it's pretty impressive.
I was going to say, all of, like, the traditional, like, music is done by one guy, and he's done both movies. It's Daniel Pemberton.
Yeah, who, I did not know that.
Yeah, he does, like, all the instrumental.
Yeah, I feel like the score was more prominent here than it was in the first one.
Yeah, agreed.
Are these easily your favorite Spider-Man movies?
Easily, no question.
Right, Nick?
Yeah, that's sort of become...
I mean, I love No Way Home. It definitely elevated the entire MCU.
I would put Far From Home and No Way Home... Well, for me, obviously, that's on a different level for me. Easily above them.
Yeah, now, for me, these are... Far and away, my favorite Spider-Man movies.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I also... I
think that sentiment is going to be shared by a lot of people.
I have to say, Jake Johnson continues to kill it as
He's
Peter Parker.
He didn't get as much to do here, but he was really
fun. No, but the scenes with Mayday...
I thought they did a great job with Mayday.
And Andy Samberg...
Nick, did you ever feel that maybe Mayday was being put in more danger than she should be?
He's the Spider-Man. It's fine.
Okay. You know, I am always... As a person who lobbies for people to, like, pipe down about child soldiers when they're talking about Teen Titans or Robin or something like that, I'm like, yes, I don't actually mind it that much. But I'm sort of surprised that so many people are so okay with it.
Yeah. Well, because we know nothing's going to happen to her. That's the thing. In this context, we know that they're not going to make the dumb mistakes that Marvel would do, where it's like, this ish baby Mayday dies because Peter took her into battle. I'm like, okay, maybe that's realistic, but it sounds like a terrible story.
And also, Andy Samberg as Ben Reilly.
Andy Samberg as Ben Reilly
was fun. Hilarious. Did you guys see the ending coming? Like,
no,
the big switch with him going to.
Yes.
Earth.
So they made a big deal about they definitely called out the Spider-Man the 42.
They did call out the 42.
And when he goes into the go home machine, it says 42, and so I'm like, oh, he's back in the wrong
I did not I made the connection, but they did such a good job of setting it up.
That's what happened to me too, Nick, because they got there and I was like, oh, there's the wrong dimension. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, they're not. I thought they were gonna do that. I guess they didn't. And then so they double faked me.
Yeah.
Like I convinced myself that, oh no, I must have been wrong. And then they did the fake out of, like, oh, they're in two different universes.
The very Empire Strikes Back, meeting yourself, but an evil version.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I also loved, we did not know going in that it was a two-parter. That news had been out, but I'd forgotten it.
Yeah.
I mean, this was years ago they told us that, so I'd totally forgotten that.
Yeah, no one at all was discussing it.
Yeah.
except for whatever except for the, Nick,
Nick is always plugged into whatever spoilers there are. So you wind up somehow.
Nick doesn't mind as much.
No, I mean, I
know for some people it was a very unpleasant surprise, but I loved it. One of my things that I've discovered about myself is
one of our customers told me that that people like we had somebody say what the F.
Yes,
I don't know why I censored that when I've said it twice this podcast, but he said that people booed it. And, like, I know that's some crazy. Of it was, like, kind of, like, sometimes people are kind of, like, laughing while they do it. Yeah. Like, oh, I was having such a good time. Boo for taking it away.
Yeah.
And they're still actually excited, but they're kind of, like, just have a visceral reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think most people had that response.
Yeah.
But I was a little surprised to hear boos.
Well, yeah. I've discovered in the same way that I know I like multiverse and alternate world, and this fits right in my life
like
for that
cliffhanger?
Reason. I like surprises. If my media concern, that's one of the reasons I'm so anti-spoiler. If my media can actually surprise me,
yeah,
then it's going to get points for me. Yeah. And so this ending, whether or not people can argue whether it's a good thing or not, it genuinely surprised me. I was like, oh, wow, didn't see that coming. And that, to me, is worth... I'd rather them keep that secret, even if it makes some people mad.
I think it can feel cheap. And I will point out a movie that I absolutely adore, and I already watched it again,
yeah,
which is Fast X. That's kind of a silly ending.
That worked for me, too, because I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, it worked, but that one I can understand some boos, because it's a little silly.
There's a lot of this going on. I mean, Dune did it, too.
Yeah.
And there's the not giving people complete movies, and I understand why you're like, I just paid for this movie, and I didn't get the whole thing.
Right.
But over the course, media is so much faster now.
Right.
That I'm like, in a few years, you're going to forget it was two parts and just watch the whole thing as one big movie.
But what I was going to say, though, is that Into the Spider-Verse was a 2-hour and 15-minute movie.
Yep.
It earned that ending.
Yep.
The emotional beats, it works.
And
you get a completion
arguably, it resolves Gwen's story.
It resolves Gwen's story. It also resolves Miles becoming himself.
Yeah.
And realizing that he is who he needs to be.
Yeah.
It's just the kind of payoff of he has to stop his dad from dying.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that plays out. Because, yeah. I mean, will we get that in 2024? I don't know.
I think we will. The fact that they're saying they had that it's scheduled for March 2024 with an anime movie that takes this much lead time.
Well, there was 5 years between Into the Spider-Verse and that.
Well, it was going to be much less, though,
and
right?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, a lot of that was COVID.
They spent 5 years working on this. That tells me they were working on both of them.
Probably so.
Because if they're like, well, now we're going to start and we're going to release it in March 2024, no one believes that. And I have to believe that they're giving that release date, even if it moves, and I bet it does move. I bet it'll move with writer strike, actor strike, rewrites, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I bet it moves like later in 2024, but I don't think it's going to move like, say, the Avatar movies to long after James Cameron is dead.
No, James Cameron AI will live on forever.
Yeah, James Cameron AI is going to make Avatar 4 in 2057.
And 5, 6, and 7.
Yes, they'll be long. Our grandchildren will be able to go to the theater and watch our robotic AI grandchildren will be able to go and watch Avatar 5.
As an aside, are either of you going to watch Avatar 2?
No. Why would I do
it
that?
It just popped up on Disney.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it.
And a part of me is like, I want to press play because I would like to know.
Y'all should both watch it. I have no intention.
We'll probably both enjoy it, Nick.
Yeah.
The word was that it was pretty well done.
And that's why I'm not going to watch it.
Cameron's very good at what he does.
I'm not going to like it.
Cameron's produced a lot of Drek, including some Terminator Drek.
I'm talking about him as a director.
But also, like, the original Avatar was a good case in point that he was perhaps declining, that was 30 years ago.
This is the point I always like to make, and I made the same point with Harrison Ford, which didn't work out for me. But I was like, what's the last good thing he made, and how long ago was it? And the answer is a long time ago, and maybe arguably Avatar. Harrison Ford came back, and then he made Shrinking in 1923, yeah. And liked him in Star Wars.
I don't think I ever doubted Harrison Ford's ability to act.
I did.
I just was like, he probably shouldn't be playing Indiana Jones anymore. I think actually the new movie is going to confirm that for
10
me.
10 to 15 yeah, years of Hollywood it. Homicide and things like that, I was like, oh, maybe he forgot how to act.
Forgot about Hollywood Homicide.
Yeah, man. There was a while there where he was really doing some real bad movies.
I kind of liked Hollywood Homicide. It was him and Josh Hartnett.
Anyway, I feel like I know for me, I'm not going to like Avatar 2. There's no point in me watching it.
I guess he produced Alita Battle Angel with Robert Rodriguez.
Right,
that
right.
was kind of like the last thing.
But you, you should watch it, and I'll watch it, and we'll trade notes.
I enjoyed
it.
We will
have a timely conversation about Avatar 2 next week.
All right. I want to real quick talk about some Marvel board games that I played recently. Dave's played some of them with me.
Yep.
We're in kind of a golden age for licensed games.
Yeah, it's actually like so notable that there like and there's maybe a slightly too many of them that there's not one obvious one to say like you can go a bunch of different routes and it might be a little overwhelming, but there are some really good Marvel games.
We just got that Star Wars Shatterpoint that people seem really liking.
Yep.
We've got DC deck buildings come back in, like all these licenses, but Marvel in particular.
Yeah.
In addition to Villainous, which is really fun, you play the Marvel villains.
Yep.
There is a card game called Marvel Remix, which unfortunately just went out of print. But that I played with our staffer Serena and her partner, and it's a quick play like set collecting Marvel game.
Yeah,
that was super fun. And
like a 20-30 minute kind of game.
Not even that. It's like 5-10.
Okay. Is it like a love letter kind
of? Yeah, kind of like that. It's okay. You basically you pick up cards. They have tags on them of different things. Hmm. Like one of the tags is Wakanda. One of them is like different heroes. You have to have a villain in your hand and a hero in your hand. And other than that, you can have 5 other cards.
Remix is like a category of game, right? Because don't they do other versions?
Fantasy Realms. Yes.
Okay, Fantasy Realms.
Which, again, all of those seem to have gone out of print. WizKids may have lost license, unfortunately, but, you know, if you can find it, you can't find it here, we're out of it.
You have to have a villain and a hero in your hand? Is the idea that almost like you're collecting a story
yes.
or something?
So at the end of the game, you have a villain, a hero, and 5 other cards, which may be other heroes or locations.
Yep.
And, like, the first game I played, I got all the Wakanda stuff, and all the Wakanda stuff was like, for each Wakanda tag you have, it's plus 7 points.
Yep.
And that kind of thing. And then I played. I got another one. Was like there was an X-Men and I had Krakoa and another location and like Cyclops and Jean. The way I got them is every turn you can either draw a card off the stack, which is a mix and the villain stack, and you can either you have to put down one of your cards in the discard. And when the discard gets to 10, the game is over. So basically, it's going to be 10 rounds unless you do a round where you're like, you discard. You can also take the face-up cards.
And you obviously discarded Krakoa because you hate it.
No, I kept it. But it was interesting because Serena was dropping all her X-Men to pick up other stuff.
Yeah.
So I kept picking up X-Men. I was building off of her discards.
Oh, okay.
But you also can pull at random and you basically try to make a set. Like I said, we played like 2 or 3 games. It was really quick play. Super fun. A little heavier, we had played earlier Marvel Champions, which I've also played with Dave and John, who works here. Marvel Champions is a co-op game for Fantasy Flight. You pick a villain, and they are running schemes, and you pick a hero deck, and you work together to try to defeat the villain's schemes and beat the villain before you run out of time.
Yep. The villain essentially is run by the game's algorithm and stuff like that, and the card it instructs you what to do.
Yeah.
All you try and use your very cool powers and sometimes uniquely built deck to bring out your powers in different ways. There's 4 different builds, and you know, more of a somebody's built to like hurt the villain's scheme. Somebody's built to deal direct damage. Somebody's built to protect other players, and you can take any given character like Captain America, Spider-Man, whoever. And build a deck around those 4 themes.
Leadership, aggression, protection,
justice.
And justice.
Yep. And any given character deck can be built around those themes, so you can play the same character and get a very different vibe with the different decks.
You can custom build, because the decks come pre-built, but you can also custom build them.
Yeah.
John has taken all of the cards out of his decks that are not the fit. Each character has like a 15-card deck that you have to
play. The core.
Yeah. And then you put 30 to 35 other cards in there. That are, you know, basic cards or locations or allies and that kind of thing. And so the decks he built for us, we went champions heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So we were playing, like, was I playing Kamala? Yes. I was playing Miss Marvel. You were playing
Sam.
Nova.
Nova, that is, the Sam Alexander, is that his name?
Yes. And John was playing She-Hulk because he wanted to play She-Hulk.
Yep.
But what we had is you had some card that was like, if you have the champion marker, you take no damage this turn. And so, like, 3 or 4 of our guys took 0 damage in a whole round.
And John in particular is pretty good at this. But, again, you can play the decks exactly as they are.
Yep.
But John has, like, included some neat combos and, like, oh, well, if you've got this card, it will allow you to go and look in your deck for this other cool card.
Yep.
And, you know, it's all very... What I found is that although the games are, of course, abstract, they do kind of have a nice sense of story to them.
Yeah.
The bad guy's scheme gets scarier as it goes along.
Right. If the scheme hits a certain amount of points, you lose. You have to thwart their
scheme. But as it's getting closer to that, they'll do things like they'll bring out your arch nemesis.
Yeah.
Or, like, we were fighting Ultron, and he would attack us with drones every turn.
Yeah.
And the drones were kind of neat because, like, in a bad way.
Yeah.
But they would make you take one card from your deck, so you're already losing that card, and you just put it face down, and it represents a low-level drone that you're going to have to fight on your turn.
And then when you defeat it, it goes in your discard pile. You basically have to kill one of your own cards.
Yeah, yeah. So Ultron's a real bastard. But it was a very fun fight. I know that y'all did the Sabretooth's attempt to assassinate Senator Kelly.
Yeah, we did the
which I think is a very cool premise.
Yep.
And it's just that y'all had a few of the rule specifics down, and that kind of threw you off.
Yeah, but also the trick was Sabretooth's thing in this was he attacks Senator Kelly, so you kind of defend him. You got to spend all your points defending. So we were so focused
on an escort mission.
You're so focused on preventing Kelly from getting killed. We weren't paying attention to Sabretooth's scheming because he's a much more dangerous attacker than a schemer.
Yeah.
But he was still scheming, and it all stacked up, and we lost.
Yeah.
So
We should for sure play that one again, Randy, knowing what we know.
Yeah. But anyway, there are, 20 decks for this, I think, you can buy individually. There are big box sets that come with two decks of heroes and then a bunch of villains.
Right.
And I've been buying this from the day. I played it at BGG 5 years ago when it first came out, and I've been buying it all, but I hadn't played it as much. Now, having played it, I'm even more addicted to it because the notion of going in and customizing and custom building decks is really appealing to me. And I've got them all built as the pre-built decks.
It's live action Marvel Snap.
Yeah, but they've got a little card that comes with each deck that tells you what's in the deck.
Yeah,
so you can break it up and build your decks with whatever, and then go back if you want to the pre-builds.
Yeah,
it's a really good game.
That original box set comes with, I think, five or six heroes.
Yeah.
Which includes, Spider-Man, three villains, Captain Marvel.
Comes with Rhino, Claw, and Ultron.
Yep.
And you can buy, there's villain packs, too. There's one for Mojo, there's one for the Hood,
the Wrecking Crew.
And then their villains come in, there's a Thanos box set, there's a Red Skull box set.
Kang.
There's a Kang box set, yeah.
Sinister Six or something.
And you know, what's fascinating to me about this is that there's actually multiple things that make this game kind of different every time.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's just going to be the build of any of your heroes. However you build the deck is going to be different every mm-hmm. time. You're going to have a different allies in it. Whatever the other players are going to be playing is different. Or whatever you're going to be going up against is different. And so, we can play that Senator Kelly deck, but play it with, Sabretooth one. Play with different heroes. Mm-hmm. It's going to play out completely differently.
Yep.
You'd say that the decks capture the essence of the characters.
Very much so.
Yeah.
They're randomly, one of the cool things that Randy did in it was he was playing Kamala Khan. One of her allies is Squirrel Girl.
Yep.
Her squirrels can do a very low-level attack, but it attacks, everybody because they swarm.
So when Squirrel Girl came, she just destroyed all the Ultron drones.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Or rather, her squirrels did.
The squirrels did.
And I was like, that is just fun. That's super cool. If somebody, you cannot play a character who's somebody else's, an ally in somebody's deck. I thought that's just kind of neat. Even though I could understand an abstract version of it, but it was just kind of a neat thing. But yeah, all of the Nova stuff I did was very much based in his powers. He had a bunch of cool stuff. Wolverine, I think we talked about this when we zeroed in on it more, Randy, but you can flip your hero card so that you are their superhero identity
or their alter ego.
And they can heal when they're in their alter ego thing, but the bad guy then schemes more instead of attacking you.
Yep.
He's not going to attack Peter Parker. Instead, he works on his evil plan.
Yeah, the notion is that while you're dealing with your secret identity stuff, the villain is scheming, which is a neat concept.
Yeah, but sometimes you need to go and do your secret identity because it doesn't just heal you. There's other assets you can get out of it. What other Marvel games?
Game I played was Age of Heroes, which is by the designer of Lords of Waterdeep, which is a legendary game. Age of Heroes is similar to Lords of Waterdeep. It is a resource management game. It is competitive, not cooperative. And it goes up to 5 players. And basically, it's got this cool watercolor art style to it. It's really cool. It's all X-Men based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you are playing a team. You have a little board that represents a team. So it's like Cyclops and Jean Grey, Forge and Storm, Wolverine and Jubilee, Kitty and Lockheed, and Magic. I feel like I'm missing one. Oh, Rogue and Gambit, if I didn't say Rogue and Gambit. And your board has 3 different resources, strength, mental thing, and whatever the other one is. And you're using that to recruit allies and put allies on the board, and the allies become essentially spaces on the board that you can use.
Okay.
So if you put down, for example, there's ones like Banshee. You put down Banshee, and if a player uses that character, if a player uses that, they would get two student pawns they could use to do further actions. And I, as the person who played Banshee, got a student pawn for them using my space.
Okay.
And they also had an effect. He was a leader of Generation X, so if you were there at the end of the turn, for a hero pawn you had on a Generation X space, you got some bonus.
Okay.
And lots of little interactions like that. And so there's a resource phase where you're going to the various spaces of the mansion, you're recruiting allies, you're gaining resources, that kind of thing.
And I don't know if you know this, but I like the X-Men.
And you're putting characters onto the X-Jet.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that phase, the characters go from the X-Jet out to the mission phase,
mm-hmm.
where you
This reminds me actually a little bit of, say, when we played Dune, how every turn Dune has, like, a clash of armies. Yeah. But, you know, you also do a lot of sort of building up and you know, what do you call that, worker placement stuff.
Yeah.
This is, like, the X-Men version of that.
Yeah. And then on the mission phase, you go either to the... There are two villain tabs at the bottom where you do combinations of resources to defeat them,
mm-hmm.
and you get points for that. And or you can go to these little team-up things, which are kind of like the allies. You play team-ups, and people, if they go use your team-up to mm-hmm. defeat the villain, which is usually an easier way to do it,
yeah.
you get victory points from this. So it's like an addition. It's like an ally kind of thing.
Right, right.
So they can do that cheaper, but then you get some points as well.
That's cool.
And when you defeat a villain... It's a little like cardboard puzzle thing.
Yep.
You pull that villain off and you put a more challenging villain in that spot. And then after you beat the challenging villain, you get the final boss that comes out.
Nice.
And this has three scenarios. It's got the Children of the Atom, which is the basic one we played. It's got Fatal Attractions, which is more Acolytes and Magneto.
Yeah.
And it's got the Age of Apocalypse, which has the
Fatal four Attractions horsemen. Is not one you see turn up too often.
This is very much the
X-Men though.
Is it?
This is very much the 90s X-Men, I would say.
Yeah.
In that you've got Forge and Storm and Jubilee and X and Wolverine, that kind of thing. And it does have, like, Generation X and...
I believe that was the sales peak of the book.
Apocalypse is in there. Mr. Sinister is in there. I think he was our big boss. Magneto is in there.
So just double-checking. Cooperative elements throughout, but competitive ultimately?
You're not really cooperating.
Okay.
You are using spaces people put down. So there's cooperative in that they're using spaces that they put on the board... But they are gaining things from you using it. It is full-on competitive.
Right. But you do have to defeat the villain together, right?
Sort of. Okay. Except you all get points for defeating the villain. Like, you are not defeating the villain for the good of the group.
Right.
You're defeating the villain to get the most points and win.
Yeah, yeah.
Wolverine's all about winning.
But it is not as... It's not like cutthroat. You're not like...
Storm doesn't go and attack Wolverine.
Right. You're It's cutthroat in the same way like Ticket to Ride is cutthroat.
Right.
There's only a limited number of spaces to put allies in. And there's a limited number of places to put, like, team-ups. So if you gather up all those spaces, they don't get any points for the team-up spaces and that right. kind of thing.
That sounds cool.
It's a lot of fun. It was a little more elaborate. Like, Marvel Champions took us, what, like 2 hours maybe to play?
Yeah.
And that was learning. Like, it's probably an hour-long game.
Right.
This was more like a 3 to 4 hour game.
Okay.
Yeah, just components-wise, I was looking at images, and yeah, it definitely looks robust.
It's got little plastic full-color tokens
yeah,
for the characters.
Yeah, I saw that. They're really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's a very pretty game. And I thought, once you get the learning curve done, it's no harder than, say, Lords of Waterdeep, and it reminds me a lot of that.
Hmm.
So I really enjoyed it. They've got a new one coming called Marvel Dagger that seems to be a Avengers game, kind of like this. I'm looking forward to checking that one out later this month. That is hitting at the end of June. So,
yeah, it's wild to have so many options.
It is. It's crazy. Well, y'all, we have a couple of things we're going to talk about. We may skip those until next week. We will talk to you next week. We will, if you're listening to this, it means I did not screw up again this week.
Yay.
And until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.